Hello, everyone. Welcome to today's episode of Lisa V TV. Today, you're going to learn about why now is not the time for you to shrink back, but to speak up and to stand with courage. You're going to learn about some stories of some people who were on the edge of death and were pulled back by going against the protocol of the health system. And one of these stories is a personal story of myself and my husband. So you're going to learn about today. And my desire, my hope is that as you listen today to these stories, that it will empower you, it will inspire you, but it would also wake you up. It will empower you to stand strong and to speak truth for the good of yourself, your family, and people who may be in need, and that you will be the advocate that you need to be when the moment arises and when the opportunity presents itself. Because listen, there's a lot of messages going around that can be confusing, can be overwhelming, and there's a lot of things back and forth, of course, being censored as well. And so the truth is not always in plain view. You have to look for it or you have to experience it in order to understand exactly what is going on. So let me talk in specifics here. So I'm going to share with you, first of all, before I share with you a story about a doctor in Alberta who took the time to care for his patients. I'm going to share with you about that and how he had to break protocol in order to keep these patients alive. I'm going to share with you a personal story that I went through with my husband that actually saved his life because we broke the protocol. So what happened was, in the summer, I was in another province and I flew back home into Alberta, which is where I live. And a few days after I had flown home, I started to get flu-like symptoms. Now I thought, oh, okay, maybe I'm run down. Maybe I'm just, you know, needing some extra rest. But like any other time that I get cold-like, flu-like symptoms, I care for myself I have some essential oils, whether I use doTERRA, On Guard, essential oils, and also one that's a respiratory blend, which, you know, takes care of the sinuses and everything if I've got a cough, and has eucalyptus and peppermint and a few other things in there. And I have chicken soup, get some fresh air, go out for a walk with my dog, and try to get over it that way. And usually I do. But this one kind of hung on a little bit longer. Plus, it had symptoms that I never had before in other flus, which was my whole body was aching and I lost my sense of smell. So I thought, huh, maybe this is COVID. Maybe I actually have contracted COVID. No problem. I didn't get tested. I just self-cared and got through it. Well, a few days after I started showing symptoms, my husband started showing symptoms. But the problem is he didn't get over his like me. His actually started to get worse. And so 10 days into his symptoms, he was at the point where he just couldn't breathe. He was gasping. He was struggling for air and oxygen, struggling to even stand up. And so at that point, I was done my journey with a cold, with the flu, and I brought him to the emergency in Leduc Hospital, which is a local hospital in our county. It's a smaller hospital, but I took him there. And by the way, it was on a weekend, which weekends are normally busier, and it was empty. We were the only ones in the emergency. I took him there. They were really kind, really, I shouldn't say, oh no, maybe there's one other person there. They cared for him. They were very respectful towards us. And in that process, they tested him for COVID, and just to rule that out, to see if that's what it was. And they gave him an inhaler at that time just to give him some ability to breathe, and which worked great, beautifully. And during the course of maybe an hour we were there, they decided that because his needs were high, he had really high oxygen needs at that point, that they were going to transport him to the University Hospital in Edmonton, where they would have more availability for what he needed in case he needed more oxygen. So they put him in the ambulance and took him there. They didn't have the test results back as to whether or not it was COVID, because they did a more extensive one to determine different variants. And so it would take a couple of hours, they said. So, but they were going to send the results to the university hospital. So I met him there. We go to the emergency again. This emergency was not packed. It was not very busy at all. There were, yes, there were people there, but it didn't seem like they were overrun. Went into the emergency, into a bed, a room with a bed, waiting for doctors to assess whether or not they were going to admit him and for a bed to become available. In the course of the time that we were there, again, they decided to do another test. So here we now have two COVID tests, and both of them, as we discovered, the first one and the second one came back positive. So that counts as two cases. Listen up here, people. Counts as two cases for COVID. Same person, just did two tests within a couple of hours. So they determined he has COVID. So they're going to admit him to the hospital and help him get the oxygen he needed. At that point, they were still just giving him antibiotics and inhaler. But interesting thing happened while we were waiting in that room for him to be admitted into the a bed on the ward. A number of doctors came in one after the other, asking about our vaccination status, asking about those things, and inquiring, and just really, you know, drilling him on things like, well, okay, well, this, and this, and why didn't you do this, and da 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 da. And I'm thinking to myself, hey, just treat him. All of that's not important. Just treat him. Treat him as if you would any other patient. Long story short is he gets admitted to the hospital. This is late Sunday night. I go home. My car needed repair. I had an appointment to put it in to get repaired the next day, which I did. It ended up taking me a few days. So I didn't actually get in to see him until Wednesday. At that point, I'd been speaking to him daily, and he progressively was getting worse. He was getting worse, worse, worse as the days went on. Day one, I will say this, day one, once they admitted him to the hospital, his doctor, on who was assigned to him, whether or not he could have ivermectin. They said, oh, no. She said, we don't do that. We don't provide that. That's not really proven to be good for COVID. So we don't provide that. Okay. So the next thing is day one in the evening, there was a doctor that would come in the middle of the night. And he, from day one, wanted to put my husband on a ventilator. And every day he would come in and say, oh, I think we need to put you in ICU and to intubate you, to ventilate. And my husband would say, no, because we had already discussed that, no, we are not going to go there unless it's absolutely necessary. But this doctor kept pushing from day one. Okay. So by the time I get in to see him, it was Wednesday morning. I go in, I spend a couple of hours. At that point, I brought in his vitamins to him, vitamin D, vitamin C, zinc, and omega-3 for him to take. He had progressively gotten worse. So I talked to the nurse. I said, can you give me a list of the medications you have him on? Which she did. And then I also talked to his doctor and said, can you please get him a intravenous vitamin C, because he's getting worse here. You need to change something up. Can you please get him on a vitamin C, high dose of vitamin C, which is like 10,000 units. Now, I got this idea because one of my clients and also a person who was in my mastermind group, another woman, had, when I told them that my husband had double lung pneumonia, which is what had his flu had progressed to, they said, oh, give him a vitamin C intravenous. You need to get him that. And so I had done some research to find out where I could get it. And I realized that, yeah, they do that for other patients, like cancer patients. So I said, okay, I'm going to ask the doctor. The doctor said, oh, no, we don't do that. I said, well, yeah, you do. You do it for cancer patients. I don't think we'll get permission to do that for COVID. I said, well, can you check? Because I would like him on a high dose of vitamin C intravenous, because he needs something more than what he's getting right now, because he's getting worse. So I left that with her. I went home. That night, I get a phone call in the middle of the night from my husband saying, they want me. So the same doctor, male doctor, comes in the middle of the night again saying, oh, we need to bring you into ICU. We need to put you on a ventilator. Your oxygen needs are so high. We need to do something more. And my husband phoned me in the middle of the night, and we're talking to this doctor, had me on speakerphone. And I said, listen, no, don't move him. I'm coming. I'm coming to the hospital and we can talk then. So I leave, I go in the middle of the night, go there. When I get there, this particular doctor is nowhere to be found. I'm standing outside my husband's room and the nurse is saying, oh, we can't let you go in right now. I got to go get the doctor. So obviously there'd been a discussion that when I came, I wasn't going to be allowed to go in. So another ICU doctor, a female doctor, comes and talks to me and she said, I'm not sure why you were allowed to come in yesterday or allowed. I'm not sure why, because I said, I was here yesterday. She said, we can't let you in today. I'm like, why not? Well, because you were exposed to him when you brought him in and he was diagnosed with COVID. So now you need to go home and quarantine for 14 days. I said, no, I had COVID. I'm done. I am not contagious. I was exposed to him, yes, but he's not. I was here yesterday. What makes the difference? She said, oh, no, there was a mistake. I'm not sure why you were able to get in yesterday, but you're not able to come in. You're not able to see him, and we need you to go home and quarantine. You're not going to be able to see him. We went back and forth, back and forth. I said, well, get me a test. Get me an antibody test. She said, oh, no, we don't do that. I said, listen, I am not contagious, and I need to support him right now. This is a time that he needs family around him. And she went so far as to say, listen, I don't want to get security to take you out of here, but I'm not letting you in there. So she would not let me in to see him. I eventually left, went back home. And I'm like, okay, this is wrong. So there's a lot of stuff. And in the course of that conversation with me, she made a comment because I asked her, but why are these people seen? And they've been all exposed. And when we first came in, they were exposed to him before you knew that it was COVID. Why now? Why don't those people go home and get quarantine? And she made this comment. She said, oh, there's different rules for unvaccinated. I'm like, oh, really? Okay. So I went home. And went to work and figuring out, okay, about this vitamin C, I need him to be on something else. So I did my research on the medication that they had him on, and I discovered that the steroids that they had him on, so they had him on some antibiotics and they stopped some, and then they had him on this steroid and a blood thinner. And the steroids that they had him on, there was one that it wasn't anti-inflammatory, but what I discovered is that it also suppressed the immune system. And I thought, oh, well, he needs to be on something to boost his immune system. They can't just suppress his immune system now. And so they weren't giving him anything else. So, okay, I had brought in some vitamins, but I understand that he needs vitamin C, high dosage. So at that point, I phoned my doctor as well, because I think I need to prove to them, because the doctor said, I need proof that you had COVID and that you're no longer a risk and no longer contagious. So I called my doctor. I said, I need a blood work for an antibody test. And my doctor's office said, we are not given permission from AHS to requisition those blood work. Don't know why. We just have not been given any instruction. So basically she couldn't do it for me. I thought, okay, this is weird and this is crazy. So I phoned a doctor friend of mine, who's not my doctor, but just a friend who is a doctor, to inquire if she knew of any place in the city I could get it done. Long story short, she was able to find a place. And the next morning and the next day, she called me to, or I get a phone call about it. But the next morning, I also get a phone call from my husband early in the morning, and he said, Lisa, they are prepping me to go into ICU, and maybe I should just go in because I'm really struggling. At this point, he was progressively getting worse with his ability to breathe, and his oxygen levels were so, his need was so high that they said, well, you know, if we need to intubate him, it's better for us to have him in ICU. That way we can just already prep him beforehand and just need to put in the tube. Otherwise, it can be really, really difficult if we got to do it on the spot in emergency manner. So basically, they're prepping him by putting in all kinds of other kinds of things, hooking him up and prepping him. And so that was Friday morning. And I said, well, what time are they going to bring him into ICU? And he didn't know. He said, probably won't be for a couple of hours. I said, okay, I'm going to send you something. So I then called. So remember, I'm not allowed in to see him. at that point, I had been asking around in my circle of friends. We have a small group of people that I didn't let everybody know his condition. I just let a certain number of people know who were praying for him about the condition and praying for the situation. And in that group of people, I had asked, does anybody know where I can get some ivermectin? And a few people had mentioned some things, but it didn't work out. And then I get a call Friday morning from someone said, hey, I've got 4 tablets of, so 2 doses of ivermectin. Would you like it? And I said, yes, but I need it this morning. So they dropped it off to me that Friday morning. I made a phone call to a friend of mine who is a chaplain. And why? Because they wouldn't let me in to see my husband because they thought I was contagious, but they would let a chaplain in for a spiritual support. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to do this. So I asked this friend of mine who's a chaplain, who my husband also knew, to go and see my husband on Friday morning. And thankfully, he was available and willing. I said, I need to give you something to give to my husband. So I gave him this little package, and then I texted my husband instructions. And in that package was the ivermectin. So that Friday morning, he took 1 dose of ivermectin. So that day, that whole day, he was, you know, they're prepping him for ICU. I get a requisition to go get my antibody test. I go and get it done. And then, of course, it takes time for the lab to get the results. So I managed to get it done. Because remember, the doctor said, I need proof that you had COVID, that you're not contagious. And I didn't want to get a swab. So they send my husband into ICU. At this point, he's not allowed to eat anything because they said, if there's anything in your stomach and we intubate you, that's not good. So we're going to starve you and kind of prep you for and watch you. And when we need to intubate you, we're going to intubate you. So Friday evening, he goes into ICU. The next morning, I talked to him and he had woken up. And the nurse had taken all of his bag and stuff and put over to the side. Now, in ICU, they just have one nurse working with them, one designated nurse. And he asked the nurse, he said, I need my bag, because remember, he's got 2 more tablets left. I need my bag to get some things out of. She said, well, what do you want? He said, I want to get some vitamins and ivermectin. She's like, oh, no, you can't take that. You can't take it. That we're not allowed to give you that. He said, you don't have to give it to me. I'm going to take it. And she said, no, you can't do that. He said, well, I have my vitamins in there as well. And I also want to get some clothes out of there, change of clothes. And she went back and forth. And finally, when he said, okay, give me my bag because I want to get, because he's all in this bed with all kinds of cords sticking out of him. He can't really move. She finally gave in, gave him his bag, and she walked out of the room. And he took his next dose of ivermectin. Okay. Now that's 24 hours. He was already feeling better. His oxygen was still better. By the end of that day, he was completely, they had lowered his oxygen levels. They saw that he was doing so much better. They started to feed him, gave him a meal. He was hungry. The next day, which was now Sunday, so this is now a whole week he's in the hospital, his main doctor comes in, was just surprised that he was doing so well. They didn't intubate him. She said, you're ready to go back to the ward. And at this point, the other doctor who wanted to intubate him was nowhere to be found. He had given up because he knew that we were fighting for him not to go on this ventilator. Now, at this point as well, my antibody test was done and it had been faxed to the unit manager. And I'm going to get back to that story in a minute. So my husband gets taken from ICU back to the ward by Sunday night. So like within 24 hours, he completely turned around because of a few things. The prayer support that we had, the ivermectin, and the vitamin C. Oh, I didn't tell you this. On Thursday, the day before he gets prepped to go into ICU, the doctor calls me back with the pharmacist. She said, listen, Lisa, I talked to the pharmacist and yes, they can give your husband some vitamin C IV, but not the amount that you want. And so I said, well, how much? She said, well, I can give 1,000 IUs, which is just a very small amount. But when she said that, the Lord dropped into my heart, my spirit. He said, remember the loaves and the fish. I said, okay, great. We'll take it. We'll take 1,000, get him started on that right away. And I felt like the Lord had said, I can multiply the impact of that. And so by faith, that was a rhema word that God gave me, that and the ivermectin as well, the next morning, as well as the prayer support. Within a very short period of time, he turned around. He was on the edge of death. And I believe that he would have actually died. They would have put him on a ventilator. He would have continually gone downhill. And I truly believe he would have died if it had not been for a number of factors. The fact that we broke protocol, we stayed on top of what was going on with him. I kept pressuring them to do certain things. And I also kept pressuring them to let me go in to see him, which I eventually did, which I eventually got in to see him. But I took a fight. They kept giving me hurdle after hurdle after hurdle. You know, first thing was, okay, we need proof. So I gave them proof of the antibody test. They said, oh, well, we need to have you do an N95, have an N95 mask to go see him in the ICU, and it needs to be custom fitted. Now, this is on a weekend. They thought I wouldn't be able to do it, but I did. It's okay. I got it. And then the story was, no, we're not letting any visitors into the ICU because of it's just, you know, there's high needs in here and we don't want. So then the next day on the Sunday, when I talked to his doctor who said he's going to be going back to the ward, I said, well, I can come see him, right? She said, no, actually AHS just put down, just declared that no visitors can come into the hospital because they're seeing an outbreak among patients on other floors and they're thinking it's coming from visitors. So it has nothing to do with you, Lisa, but it's AHS. Okay. This now becomes very strange. So the Saturday night AHS brings into this mandate that, oh, no visitors can come in. So my husband gets moved out of ICU onto the ward. They're going to monitor him for a day to see, make sure he's okay. Cause they're like, you know, just in case. And so while I'm speaking to my husband on Monday morning by phone, and now at this point, they moved him into a room with another person. While I'm speaking to him on the phone, somebody walks in the room to visit the other patient. And my husband said, oh, there's a visitor in the room. So I said, okay, let me call you back. And I called the nursing station to talk to his nurse. And they said, oh, yeah, no, AHS lifted the rule and they're allowing visitors, but you're not allowed in because you have to quarantine. I said, I do not. And this whole story went back again. And I went back and forth to say, listen, I faxed you the information. You have it. You need to, that antibody test is proof. And then the nurse referred to the unit nurse, and she said, oh, or the manager, whatever they call her, say, I need to talk to her. She makes a decision. And you know, I'm telling this really quickly, but what I want you to understand is that they had excuse after excuse after excuse as to why I could not get in. And there were not legitimate reasons. But when it came down to it, it was because they were treating me differently because of my status, my vaccination status. I had given them everything they needed. And even to that last point on the Monday when the nurse calls me back, she said, oh, the new unit manager said you can come in, but you have to have a negative COVID test. And then I got mad. I'm like, no, I'm not doing another thing. I'm not doing another thing. You have the proof. You need to let me come in. And I also need you to put that in writing so that I can give it to my lawyer. Put in writing, why are you not allowing me to see my husband in the hospital? I want you to put it in writing because you have every bit of proof that you need that I'm not contagious, that I'm not caring, and that I've had COVID. So she hangs up. A few minutes later, I get a call back. Say, oh, everything's good. You can come in now. You can come in and see your husband. So why do I tell you all that? Because it's not a time to shrink back. It's a time to speak up and to stand with courage and to be an advocate for those who are in your sphere of influence, for yourself, for your family, because what's happening in the healthcare system, especially in Alberta, and I doubt it's isolated to Alberta, is not right. And there is this protocol that's in place that I believe is killing more people than the actual virus itself. It became very obvious to me when I was in there. And this is not isolated, because there's also a story of a doctor in Alberta that I'm going to share with you right now who confirmed what my suspicions were. And this just happened. He spoke in Vancouver in last weekend, I believe, and he talked about his experience as an ER doctor and how he had to break protocol in order to save three patients' lives. But there were consequences for him. And it's just unreal. But I'm going to share this with you so that you can see that this is not just an isolated incident. And even that, there's more, a multitude of stories. So this is not a time for you to shrink back. This is a time for you to tune in to the voice of God within you, but also pay attention where you feel like, oh, there's something not right. Because the message that's coming to you from the mass media, from the government, from the Alberta system, from the healthcare system, saying things are overrun. The crisis is not because of COVID. It's because of a broken system. And a friend of mine said this the other day, and I totally agree. If they can't handle COVID right now and the number of cases, how can they handle people coming in a wartime? You know, limbs blown off and things like, it's a broken system, and they're using COVID to cover up some things and to also twist the truth. COVID, people who have, I know many people who have been double vaccinated. This is not about vaccination or non-vaccination. No matter what, if it's vaccinated or unvaccinated, you can carry COVID, and who ends up going to the hospital are both people. But it's the protocol that's being followed that is of great concern. And the restrictions that are put on doctors should be concerning to you. All right. So basically, this is what happened to this doctor in rural Alberta, in Rimby, Alberta. His name is Dr. Daniel Nagase, N-A-G-A-S-E. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that properly, but he's been a doctor for over 15 years and an emergency doctor for 10 years, servicing the rural communities throughout Alberta since 2015. So the story that he shared publicly in Vancouver was, and he was, you should know that when he was speaking at a anniversary of the Nuremberg trials. And so he was talking a little bit about those things, remembering what happened then, and also remembering what's happening right now to doctors that are being censored and suppressing the truth from nurses and doctors. So he said, let me tell you what happened in Rimby, Alberta, a small town a couple of hours west of Red Deer. He started his shift Saturday morning in the ER, and when it came time for him to do his rounds on the ward patients, the charge nurse informed him that three of the patients on the COVID wing had deteriorated overnight. Now, all these patients were on oxygen and extremely short of breath. The only medication that these patients were on were steroids, a medication that will decrease inflammation but increase the chances of a bacterial infection by suppressing the immune system. So this just confirms what I found out in my research as well. Same thing that they were giving my husband. So these COVID patients at this hospital were on immune suppressants. When he goes on to talk about that, one of the women had said to him, she felt like the doctors had put her in a corner to die. They weren't doing anything for her. So this doctor, Dr. Daniel, said to her, I can't speak for the usual doctors during the week, but it's the weekend and I'm going to do everything I can to help. Don't you love him already? He offered her ivermectin. She wanted to try it because she heard nothing but good things about it. In fact, all three patients wanted to try ivermectin. So then he went on to try to locate it because the hospital didn't have any. So he had to ask Red Deer's Central Pharmacy, Red Deer's Hospital Central Pharmacy, for the medication. But they refused to send him ivermectin. Red Deer's central pharmacist said ivermectin was useless for COVID. So let me just pause right here for a moment. Whenever did a pharmacist have the right to override a doctor's prescription for their patient? Well, this is what's happening here. Their override said, oh, no, it's useless. Don't give your patient that. It's not your patient. It's the doctor's patient. He has the right to prescribe what he feels is best for the patient. So the pharmacist said, no, it's useless for COVID. He even had the pharmacy director for all of Alberta contact this doctor, this rural doctor, rural central pharmacist, contacted the pharmacy director, who called the doctor and told Dr. Daniel again that ivermectin didn't work. This pharmacy director for Alberta Health Services is Dr. Gerald Lazarenko. Remember that name. So he insisted that ivermectin had no place in the treatment of COVID. Like, they're going through these great lengths to tell him what he shouldn't be doing. So Dr. Daniel didn't give up. He checked the local pharmacies and the charge nurse. He said, God bless her, because she found a place. Even though, although both pharmacies in town did not have ivermectin, there was one pharmacist who would do everything he could to get some, even if it took him all day. Well, Dr. Daniel said, we don't have all day, but my patients are sick. So he started them on the next best thing, which was hydroxychloroquine, which the hospital did have. Because hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin, for that matter, have been around for decades, and they've been used for other illnesses, treating successfully. So Dr. Daniel said he also started these patients on vitamin C, vitamin D, and zinc. And because the patients were coughing and short of breath, he gave them inhalers, the same inhalers that have been used for asthma for over 50 years. He also gave them azithromycin, which is an antibiotic, I believe. And surprisingly, by late afternoon, the town pharmacist also found some ivermectin. Now, he couldn't get it through his usual chemical supply because it was a Saturday, but he got it through an agricultural supply. And he checked with that supplier to make sure it was the exact same formula and the ivermectin that was for human consumption. And they said yes. He also brought it back to his pharmacy and checked it again. And he called Dr. Daniel, said, I have some. So Dr. Daniel handed it to each of his three patients with the exact dose according to their weight. And within hours of getting the ivermectin, he gets another phone call from the Central Zone Medical Director, Dr. Jennifer Bestard. She called him to say that he was forbidden from giving ivermectin to patients. And Dr. Daniel pushed back and he said, you know, you've never met my patients. You're not their doctor. And you had no right to be changing the care of my patients without the patient's permission. She said ivermectin was forbidden from the hospital. Even the patients, if they had their own ivermectin, would not be allowed to take their own ivermectin. She said it was a violation of Alberta Health Services policy, or their protocol, to give ivermectin for COVID. This is wrong. This is so wrong. So this was on the Saturday. The next day, the Sunday, she called the doctor, Dr. Daniel, and she said, and she gave him 15 minutes notice that he would be relieved of his duties. Dr. Daniel said, well, that's unreasonable. I have an emergency department full of patients who can't be sorted out in 15 minutes. An hour later, they sent a local doctor to replace him. They didn't even want him to check up on the patients who he had given ivermectin to. Not even 24 hours after getting ivermectin, two of the three patients were almost completely better. They were out of bed walking around, and all the crackles in their lungs from the day before were gone. And it took about 18 hours and one dose of ivermectin to get that turnaround. The third patient was a 95-year-old who stayed the same. She didn't get any worse like she had gone the previous night. He found out later that no sooner than he had left the Rimby Hospital, the next doctor who came in to replace him stopped all the antibiotics, stopped all the vitamins. She even stopped the patient's inhalers. Within hours of him leaving the hospital, this doctor took away the patient's inhalers that would help them breathe. And they were not even allowed vitamins. The two other patients, who were both 70 years old, had immediate recoveries after the single dose of ivermectin, and they left the hospital that week. Now, Dr. Daniel says, what doctor would take away antibiotics and inhalers for any viral pneumonia? No doctor would do that. Never mind for COVID. No doctor would do that to any patient with pneumonia unless they were, and he paused there, meaning unless they're trying to kill the patient, unless they're trying to get another case to their numbers and their stats to say, look how many patients are dying in the ICU or in the COVID ward and how many put on ventilators, unless they're trying to do something that's evil. That's for you to think about. That's for you to reflect on and to ponder. Why would any doctor do that when they wouldn't do it for any other condition? Why would they do it for COVID? Take away all these medications that are helping someone. The Dr. Daniel went on to say that it gets even worse. In that brief day and a half in the small town of Rimby, he saw two other patients who had recently been discharged from Red Deer Hospital after being on the COVID ward. They were sent home with nothing, not even an inhaler. These patients ended up in ER at a small hospital wanting help. And just days after being sent home from a tertiary care hospital with nothing. And he said, and he believed, there is something very malicious going on. Just a week after giving ivermectin and then filing a complaint against the Alberta pharmacy director, a complaint was sent to the College of Physicians and Surgeons about this pharmacy director, because the whole entire province had access to 11 pages of studies showing zero mortality rate for patients given ivermectin. Let that sink in. In study after study after study, there's a 0% mortality, 0% mortality with ivermectin. And in severe COVID, there's a 50% reduction in mortality with ivermectin. This is all in the Alberta Health Service's own ivermectin report, but they refused to acknowledge it. So just a week after Dr. Daniel filed a complaint that Dr. Gerald Lazarenko was withholding a life-saving medication from an entire province, the Alberta College of Physicians and Surgeons forbade doctors and pharmacists from giving patients ivermectin. I don't know what your take is on this. You know, Alberta Health Service is probably going to deny this, and maybe this is going to be censored. But this is really, really evil, and this is really wrong. But he's not the only doctor who has found these things. And like other doctors, like Dr. Hoff in BC, he's being censored. And why? Why is it? Why are these legitimate medications being withheld from people? I believe it's not COVID that's killing people. It's the protocol that is being followed in the Alberta Health Services and probably every other health service in every other province in Canada. This is not a time to shrink back, but to stand up and speak and to stand with courage and to speak with truth and advocate for those, whether it be people in your sphere of influence or your children or grandchildren, or one day where you might need someone to be an advocate for you. Now is the time not to shrink back, but to speak up and stand with confidence and courage to see this overturned and to see our freedoms given back to us and our healthcare system cleaned up so that people can trust that what is happening in the hospitals is really for their well-being and not just for some pharmaceutical company to get rich or other agenda that is evil. Rather than seeing this as an obstacle, I want you to see this as an opportunity to begin to find your voice, speak the truth, and to stand with courage so that you can impact the world around you and be an advocate for those in your, for yourself, but also for those in your sphere of influence. Do your homework. Don't just listen to the false prophets in the mass media that are talking. Do your homework and find out what is truth and stand in that place. People, let me know in the comments. What is your biggest takeaway? What did you learn? And what are you going to do about it?